Washington, wishing you will have a wonderful day.
This is VOA News. His second address to the UN General Assembly facing no shortage of tough issues. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan says the president goes to New York in good shape.
With the wind at his back.
Touting U.S. alliances, unity in backing Ukraine amid Russia's war and historic investments at home. But UN Chief Antonio Guterres sees a world in trouble.
We cannot go on like this.
Citing conflicts, climate change, economic woes.
And yet we are gridlocked in colossal global dysfunction.
Last year, President Biden focused on a post-Trump return to American leadership and global partnership. One analyst says this year demands more. The president's expected to heavily focus his address on the war in Ukraine. Sagar Magani, Washington.
And in Russia, the separatist leaders of four Russian-controlled areas of Ukraine say that they are planning to hold referendums this week for the territories to become part of Russia as Moscow loses ground in the war it launched. The votes will be held in the Luhansk, Kherson, and partly Russian-controlled Zaporizhia and Donetsk regions. The announcement of the controlled Zaporizhia and Donetsk regions and the balloting will start on Friday. It comes after a close ally of Russian President Vladimir Putin said on Tuesday that they were needed. The former Russian President Dmitry Medvedev also said that folding Luhansk and Donetsk into eastern Ukraine into Russia itself would make their redrawn frontiers irreversible and enable Moscow to use any means to defend them. This is VOA News. Hurricane Fiona has blasted the Turks and Caicos Islands as a Category 3 storm after devastating Puerto Rico and creating problems in the Dominican Republic. AP correspondent Norman Hull has more.
The National Hurricane Center says Fiona's eye passed close to Grand Turk, the capital of Turks and Caicos. The government had already imposed a curfew and urged people to get out of flood-prone areas. Storm surge could push water levels as high as 8 feet above normal. Historic floodwaters have started to recede in Puerto Rico. A massive cleanup effort came on the fifth anniversary of Hurricane Maria, which hit as a Category 4 storm in 2017 and knocked out power for a year in some areas. In the Dominican Republic, Fiona left thousands of homes without power. I'm Norman Hall.
The independent arbiter tasked with inspecting documents seized in an FBI search of former U.S. President Donald Trump's Florida home says that he intends to push briskly through the review process. Raymond Deary, the veteran Brooklyn-based judge, also appeared skeptical of the Trump team's reluctance to say whether it believed the records had been declassified. AP correspondent Eric Tucker reports that the independent arbiter wants information from Trump's lawyers about the classification of those documents.
One of the things that's emerged over the last 24 hours is that the special master Raymond Deary has been asking the Trump team to disclose to him any information about whether or not the seized documents have been declassified. That's something that Donald Trump has repeatedly maintained in public statements, that he has declassified the documents that the FBI recovered. And so Judge Deary asked the Trump legal team for any information about that point of view.
And the purpose of Tuesday's meeting was to sort out next steps in a review process expected to slow by weeks, if not months, the criminal investigation to the retention of top secret information at Mar-a-Lago after Trump left the White House. U.S. federal authorities have charged 48 people in what they're calling the largest pandemic-related fraud scheme yet uncovered. The defendants allegedly stole $250 million from a federal program that provides meals to low-income children. The prosecutors say few meals were actually served, and the defendants used the money to buy luxury cars, property, and jewelry. Documents made public Tuesday charged the defendants with counts including conspiracy, wire fraud, money laundering, and bribery. Prosecutors say the defendants created companies that claimed to be offering food to thousands of kids, then sought reimbursement. This year, the U.S. Justice Department has made prosecuting pandemic-related fraud a priority and has stepped up enforcement actions. Via remotes, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Today is Wednesday, September 21st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, UN chief calls for tax on fossil fuel as world leaders arrive for debates on crucial global issues.
The fossil fuel industry is feasting on hundreds of billions of dollars in subsidies and windfall profits while households' budgets shrink and our planet burns.
Ukraine moves to stabilize and demine recently retaken territories from Russian forces.
President Zelensky confirmed once again that the main goal in the Kharkiv region is to stabilize the situation and to hold the positions firmly, as he said.
And a school administrator in Myanmar says government helicopters attacked a school and a village, killing at least 13 people, including 7 children. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Security around the United Nations headquarters in New York was stepped up on Tuesday as world leaders arrived for the first day of the general debate of the General Assembly. World leaders from over 100 countries are expected to attend the week-long event. UN Chief Antonio Guterres, in a speech, urged rich countries to tax windfall profits of fossil fuel companies. He said the money should be used to help countries harmed by climate crisis and people who are struggling with rising food prices and energy prices.
Our world is in peril and paralyzed. Geopolitical divides are undermining the work of the Security Council, undermining international law, undermining trust and people's faith in democratic institutions, undermining all forms of international cooperation. We cannot go on like this, carrying one of today's rarest commodities, hope. The United Nations Charter and the ideals it represents are in jeopardy. We have a duty to act, and yet we are gridlocked in colossal global dysfunction. International relations seem to be moving towards a G2 world. Now we risk ending up with a G-nothing. No cooperation, no dialogue, no collective problem solving. There is another battle we must end, our suicidal war against nature. The fossil fuel industry is feasting on hundreds of billions of dollars in subsidies and windfall profits while households' budgets shrink and our planet burns. Excellencies, let's tell it like it is. Our world is addicted to fossil fuels, and it's time for an intervention. We need to hold fossil fuel companies and their enablers to account.
That's UN Chief Antonio Guterres. Ukrainian officials have announced efforts to urgently stabilize recently retaken eastern territory and stressed the need for rapid gains in order to deny Russia, quote, any foothold on Ukrainian soil, unquote, with Russia's invasion nearing a 7-month mark. From Odessa, reporter Anna Chernikova shares more with Flashpoint Ukraine's host Steve Miller.
President Zelensky confirmed once again that the main goal in the Kharkiv region is to stabilize the situation and to hold the positions firmly, as he said. So basically, this is what is ongoing now. Ukrainian military is taking positions. They strengthen their positions, making sure that Russian forces cannot come back to these territories in the future. And for the moment, we know that the situation in the Kharkiv region is quite difficult, not only in terms of the humanitarian side, but also in terms of the amount of bodies that Ukrainian experts and rescue team is finding in all these territories around. We know about a massive grave in Izum, but as we know now that it's not the only one. This is a huge work which is ongoing right now. And in terms of the military side, the most important now is to keep the territories and to strengthen the borders.
And speaking of the humanitarian situation, Ukraine is continuing to investigate allegations of war crimes committed by Russian forces. And you mentioned the mass graves found near Izum. But there were also the revelation of so-called torture rooms as Ukrainian troops re-entered the recently re-liberated areas. What do we know about those investigations?
For example, we hear that in one of the villages in the Kharkiv region, at the train station, it was found this torture room, and the instruments that were used for tortures is electricity. This was already found and is under investigation, but it was already confirmed. And this is just an ordinary train station. Unfortunately, people, locals, also tell this kind of stuff, that electricity is used quite often. And this is what we have confirmed. Again, we don't have any official reports on any other kind of tortures which been used. But as I already said, investigations are just ongoing. And final numbers and final information about the type of the tortures and amount of people who were killed like this, unfortunately, is to be found out in the future.
That's reporter Anna Chernikova speaking with Flashpoint Ukraine's host, Steve Miller. A U.S. Navy-guided missile destroyer sailed through the Taiwan Strait Tuesday, a few days after President Joe Biden vowed Washington will defend Taiwan in the event of an invasion by China. Some military analysts worry that with the Pentagon's commitment to equipping Ukraine and its NATO responsibilities, American forces might be stretched too thin for any effective counter to a full-scale Beijing assault on the island it claims as its territory. For more, I spoke with VOA's national security correspondent Jeff Seldon.
U.S. intelligence assessment of what's going on here is that Chinese President Xi Jinping wants to have Taiwan as part of China, to be one China, and that Xi Jinping has told his military that they need to be ready to take Taiwan by force by 2027. U.S. intelligence officials also say that there's no indication right now that Xi Jinping actually wants to use force. He'd rather do it by other means. Now, with this as a backdrop, tensions have been building across the Taiwan Strait. The U.S., Taiwan, other regional powers have accused Beijing's military of becoming ever more aggressive. And in light of this, the president repeatedly now has said that should China decide to use force against Taiwan, the U.S. would use its military to help Taiwan defend itself. And each time the president has done that, the White House has then tried to walk, and the State Department and other U.S. officials have tried to walk it back and say, no, the U.S. is not changing its policy. And its policy for the longest time has been something called strategic ambiguity, that the U.S. is not going to be clear exactly how it would respond if China decided to use force against Taiwan.
And Jeff, from the Pentagon's perspective, what kind of assets, personnel, that the U.S. have around that area, in that region, bearing in mind that it has a lot of responsibilities all around the world at the moment?
For years now, the Pentagon and Pentagon leaders under multiple administrations have talked about a shift in focus, a pivot to Asia, and a pivot specifically to address China, which along with Russia is one of the what the U.S. considers basically the major world powers that the U.S. needs to worry about. Now, in terms of a U.S. military presence on Taiwan, there really isn't any official military presence, and it isn't big. Unofficially, there may be as many as 40 U.S. personnel on the island. And then, of course, the U.S. has lots of bases in the general East Asia Pacific, the Indo-Pacific. It also relies heavily on its allies.
That's VOA National Security Correspondent Jill Seddon speaking with me from Washington, D.C. China's foreign ministry said on Monday Beijing has lodged, quote, stern representations, unquote, with the United States after U.S. President Joe Biden said U.S. forces will defend Taiwan in the event of a Chinese invasion. The spokesperson at the foreign ministry, Mao Ning, said at a media briefing that China reserves the right to take all necessary measures in response to activities that split the nation apart. She also urged the U.S. to handle Taiwan-related issues, quote, in a prudent and proper manner, unquote, and not to send the wrong signals to Taiwan independent separatist forces, warning the United States not to seriously damage Sino-U.S. relations and peace in the Taiwan Strait. For more, I spoke with Robert Sutter, professor of practice of international affairs at the George Washington University Elliott School of International Affairs.
My sense is that it's a bit of a signal that's important as well. And so the timing, I think, is very important. If one takes that into consideration, then he's making a point here about the U.S. position as China ramps up its military pressure on Taiwan. And the point seems to be that he doesn't want to disrupt the whole China policy and the understandings we have with China. But one of those understandings with China is that the Taiwan issue will be resolved peacefully. And the Chinese aren't acting that way. I think it's a very good response. I think this is the kind of thing that you can do that in a period of tension, which is still consistent with the policy. It doesn't change the policy. It gives the president a voice in this situation, which I think signals to China.
What are the ramifications for Taiwan and also the entire region?
The ramifications are for Taiwan that they will be more secure. I think this shows that this president is ready to apply power as necessary in the face of Chinese aggression. So during the duration of this president, I think they will have a greater sense that he actually will do that. The region will be worried about rising tensions in the Taiwan Strait. They will be worried about rising tensions in U.S.-China relations. And this is unfortunate that this is happening and that the United States has to be part of this. But the United States wants to and needs to defend itself against the various challenges that China poses. And when you do that, you basically show the Chinese leaders that in the past, the U.S. has not challenged them when they have been aggressive, assertive, nefarious, underhanded, and so forth. They haven't done it. Now they're doing it. There's going to be tension with that. No question about it. But I think it's an appropriate position for the American president to say this.
President Biden is seen by some as a dove when it comes to the use of power. I know the administration officials have said they do not want a new China policy, but he's been hawkish in his defense so far, from Ukraine to China with Russia. Is this another version of U.S. defense posture as President Biden sees it, or he's just been pushed by circumstances beyond his control?
I think he's changed his mind. He definitely had a different view of China 2 years ago. And even when he was becoming president, even in the campaign, he was tougher on China, but not this way. He's been this way since about March of 2021. I think he understands what's at stake now.
That's Robert Sutter, professor of practice of international affairs at George Washington University Elliott School of International Affairs, speaking with me from Washington, D.C. Iran's President Ibrahim Raisi says there will be no agreement to revive the 2015 Iran nuclear deal unless the U.S. provides guarantees it would not pull out of the pact again, as the Trump administration did in 2018. Meanwhile, two Republican congressmen tell VOA they do not believe Tehran is operating in good faith, as VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
As world leaders began to gather in New York City for the United Nations General Assembly, or UNGA, Iran's president, Ibrahim Raisi, put a damper on any hopes of reviving the 2015 International Iran Nuclear Deal. Raisi told CBS News 60 Minutes that since the Trump administration unilaterally withdrew from the deal in 2018, Tehran wants guarantees from Washington that would not happen again under a new administration. One expert told VOA it would be very hard for any U.S. administration to offer Tehran guarantees for a future administration. Alex Fatanka is director of the Iran program at the Middle East Institute in Washington. He spoke to VOA via Skype.
So I think what the Iranian side needs to understand is if they really want to make the next deal more durable, sustainable, and harder for any American president to walk away from, it is in Iran's best interest to very quickly broaden the political dialogue with the United States to build confidence.
In an interview with VOA at the White House, National Security Council Coordinator John Kirby said the U.S. and Iran are now farther away from an agreement, but he still believes it is better for the Iran nuclear deal, known as the JCPOA, to be revived.
The United States is still committed to getting back into the JCPOA, getting it back implemented, because, again, we believe the deal was working before the previous administration pulled out. Iran is closer now to breakout capability now, today, as you and I sit here, than they were anywhere near when the deal was put in place back in 2015.
On Capitol Hill, Republican lawmakers oppose efforts by the Biden administration to get the deal implemented again. Representative Tim Burchett told VOA he believes Iran is not going to deal in good faith. At UNGA, France's Foreign Minister Catherine Colonna called on Iran to accept the proposal on the table to revive a nuclear deal, warning that it will not get a better offer. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
In other news, a school administrator says government helicopters have attacked a school and a village in Myanmar, killing at least 13 people, including 7 children. The number of children killed in a government attack last Friday in Saigang region appears to be the highest since the army seized power in February 2021. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. UN investigators accused the Venezuelan government of Nicolas Maduro of a deliberate policy of repression to crush dissent by violent abusive means to maintain its grip on power. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The government barred the three-member fact-finding mission on Venezuela from entering the country, so it has based its latest report on 246 confidential in-person and remote interviews and on reams of case files and legal documents. The experts say their investigations and analyses show the government relies on its military intelligence service, known as JITSIM, to repress dissent in the country. This, it says, is done through grave crimes and human rights violations that could amount to crimes against humanity. The report documents 122 cases of victims subjected to torture, sexual violence, and other cruel or inhuman treatment. It says these crimes are carried out in intelligence headquarters in the capital, Caracas, and in a network of covert detention centers across the country. Mission Chair Marta Valina says Venezuela's civilian intelligence agency, SEBIN, also has tortured and ill-treated opposition politicians, journalists, human rights defenders, and protesters. She says these acts of violence are not conducted at random by individuals acting alone in either the state military or civilian intelligence services.
Instead, DGCIM and SEBIN were part of a machinery designed and deployed to execute the government's plan to repress dissent and cement its own grip on power. This plan was orchestrated at the highest political level, led by President Nicolas Maduro and supported by other senior authorities.
The experts say violations continue to this day and take place in a climate of almost complete impunity. They say the handful of intelligence officials who have been held to account have been low-ranking. Fact-finding mission member Francisco Cox says Venezuelan authorities have made no effort to hold perpetrators to account in a way that would provide justice and redress to victims.
That is why, in our report, we have taken the decision to focus on, and in some cases name, specific individuals in DGCIM and SEBIN. We have reasonable grounds to believe that these individuals are responsible for human rights violations and crimes against humanity and should be investigated.
The experts say they have sent 23 letters to Venezuelan authorities asking to meet with them, receive information, and to give them the opportunity to respond to their allegations. They say they've received no response. The report of the fact-finding mission will be submitted to the UN Human Rights Council next week. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thank you, Lisa. Reports that Eritrea is mobilizing reserve troops has raised international concerns that a reignited war in Ethiopia's Tigray region could quickly escalate. A Tigrayan force spokesman said Tuesday that Eritrean troops have launched a, quote, full-scale offensive, unquote, supported by Ethiopian forces. Eritrean and Ethiopian officials have yet to comment on the reports or a series of airstrikes this month that hospital officials say killed Tigrayan civilians. Mohamed Yusuf reports from VOA's Africa News Center in Nairobi.
Tweet. A spokesman for the Tigray People's Liberation Front said Eritrean forces have launched a full-scale attack in parts of the Tigray region with the help of forces from the Amhara and Afar regions. Getachew Reda said TPLF forces were defending their positions against their enemies. There was no immediate comment from Eritrean and Ethiopian authorities regarding the reported offensive. The U.S. Special Envoy for the Horn of Africa, Mike Harmer, ended his visit to Ethiopia last week, the third visit since he was appointed in June. In a news briefing Tuesday, Harmer said Eritrea must stop interfering with its neighbors' internal affairs.
We've been tracking Eritrean troop movements across the border. They're extremely concerning and we condemn it. All external foreign actors should respect Ethiopia's territorial integrity and avoid fueling the conflict. We couldn't be any clearer. We've said this repeatedly. We will encourage those that might be able to communicate directly with Asmara that this is of extreme concern and must stop.
Eritrea supported the Ethiopian government of Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed when the war between Ethiopia and the TPLF broke out in November 2020. Tigray officials accuse Eritrea of committing rights violations against its people, a claim it denies. Hassan Khananji, head of the Hoan Institute for Strategic Studies, says Eritrea's mobilization of troops is guided by the government's fear of conflict spreading into its territory.
There is a sense that, you know, Eritrea perhaps expects some kind of incursions or attack from TPLF. And so in part is an attempt to preempt that by increasing its own readiness, as well as being ready to be able to offer whatever support perhaps that, you know, Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed may need.
A report released Monday by the United Nations Human Rights Council accused all sides of the Tigray conflict of crimes against humanity. It warned that resuming the conflict increased the risk of more crimes against the population. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Every year, world leaders gather in New York for the annual United Nations General Assembly. Count on VOA to be there, delivering news you can trust on radio, TV, and the web. A free press is essential. VOA Africa, your trusted source for news and information.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. And check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA, and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is determined to prevent the Iranian regime from acquiring a nuclear weapon. President Joe Biden has repeatedly made that clear. He has also made clear he believes the best way to achieve that goal is through diplomacy. Since April 2021, the United States has engaged in indirect negotiations with Iran with the aim of a mutual return to full implementation of the Iran nuclear deal, the JCPOA. The United States exited the deal under then-President Donald Trump in 2018, and since then, Iran's breakout time to produce enough material for a nuclear weapon, should it choose to do so, has been dramatically reduced from about a year prior to the U.S. exit from the deal to a matter of weeks or less today. In an interview on Al Arabiya, U.S. National Security Council Coordinator for Strategic Communication John Kirby emphasized that regardless of whether a mutual return to full implementation of the JCPOA is ultimately achieved, the United States is fully prepared to counter Iran's destabilizing activities in the region, which have continued to escalate since the U.S. left the JCPOA in 2018. With or without a nuclear deal, we're going to defend our national security interests, said NSC Coordinator Kirby. We can do that economically with sanctions that still stay in place. And we can do that militarily in terms of defending our people and our facilities. The United States would prefer not to take such steps, said Mr. Kirby. Iran has some decisions it has to make, not just with respect to the nuclear deal on the table, but what kind of future they want to see for themselves going forward in the region. Mr. Kirby noted that Iran's leaders are the ones supporting terrorist networks. They are the ones threatening maritime traffic. They are the ones contributing to destabilization on the political forefront inside the Middle East. And they can make some decisions on their own to stop doing those kinds of things. And they would not face the kind of pressure they're going to get from the United States and other countries, economically and militarily.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.